How will the shape of cars change if they become autonomous? When vehicles become completely autonomous, then the whole reason for the journey will probably be different. So first of all, people will still be getting from A to B. That's taken as read. But cars will then become livable environments. So they'll be used as offices. They'll be used to perform leisure-time functions, such as watching movies or using social media, talking on the telephone. So the vehicle interior is going to change quite considerably over the next 20 or 30 years or so as autonomy becomes more and more of an issue. And you will see vehicles become almost like mini offices in some ways, so you'll have meeting spaces. If we can be totally reliant on the technology to get us safely from A to B, you might even find situations where people can recline the seats, kick back and relax. So you might have reclining seats, for example. And that changes the whole vehicle interior, much beyond where we are currently. So there's going to be big changes in the interior of the vehicle over the years ahead, and it could be a very exciting future for us all.
Will drink drivers ever be a thing of the past with new technology? There is already technology at the moment that is available to help with drink driving problems. So we have the technology available of an interlock. This is a breathalyzer that you can put on the vehicle. So it means that you have to breathe into the vehicle and the ignition won't start until it's got a negative reading for alcohol. So these are becoming more and more common. So for example, they're regularly used in Sweden on public transport. So public transport drivers would be required to give a breathalyzer reading and the vehicle won't start if they're shown positive for alcohol. I think that level of technology could be readily rolled out and become widely available on cars.
Is there a possibility of ever having time travel? This is a really good question. I have pondered on this considerably over the years. Sadly, I don't think it's ever going to be possible though, and the reason why I say that is because there would already be people amongst us who had come back or travelled back in time from, say, the 22nd century and would be sharing their experiences with us. And as that is not the case, I just don't think that time travel is ever going to be possible because it would already be a reality.
Question is, how will the provision of charging ports for electric vehicles change over the next few years? So obviously it's a bit of a chicken and egg situation. As people probably know, it's very much about how many electric vehicles there are, and then there's the infrastructure, and one doesn't really survive without the other. I think the interesting thing is really about where these charging points will be. So generally they're kind of in car parks or service stations and so on at the moment. But there's an awful lot of push to have them just in street furniture. So people in London might have already seen them. So they have them in lampposts, other places where there's already the electrical supply. So that obviously that will make it much easier for people just to be able to charge wherever they are. There's also a push for charging in residential streets now as well. There's a whole new concept called vehicle to grid, and that's kind of really driving interest in the residential areas.
How do you expect the shape of cars and other vehicles to change over time? Quite hard to predict because a lot of vehicle shape is a design-driven thing, so it's a style-driven aspect of the vehicle. But if we're going to reduce drag and move towards more electric-type vehicles, then it's possible to package the vehicle differently because you haven't got to put an engine in the vehicle, and that may provide the opportunities to make cars slightly lower, which can reduce the aerodynamic drag. We can optimise them slightly differently. And of course, the other thing that we can do in future is perhaps make vehicles a bit smaller, because that has a big impact on the amount of energy that they consume.
Does elevating public transport to the sky represent more or less dangers to citizens? Really good question. And if you think about it, there's an awful lot of sky. I think we have to take some lessons from plane travel, where we hardly get any planes having mid-air collisions because there is just so much sky for them to utilise, which means that you can keep planes relatively separate. So the answer could be on the surface. Yes, I think it's going to be a reality in the years ahead, and I think it will be quite safe because we've got the space to utilise in order to keep these vehicles separate. on the ground, we've only got so much space, and we, as you know, from congestion and from the roads being the way that they are, crashes are a common everyday occurrence. I think this could be very positive for us in terms of safety, but I think the technology is going to take a little while to perfect yet before we can say that they're going to be a reality.
Why are electric cars so much more developed than electric motorcycles? That's true. Here in the UK, we don't see too many electric motorcycles on the road, but things are different on the other parts of the world. So in China, we have more than 20 million electric two-wheel vehicles on the road, and the number is growing. So I think the difference is because of the culture or habit difference, or the road infrastructure is not so friendly here in the UK for electric motor vehicles.
So how safe are driverless cars? Very good question, because at the moment we simply don't know the answer, which is why we're doing a lot of research in this area. We think on the whole they'll be pretty safe, and the evidence in laboratory tests and on test tracks, etc., suggests that there is a high degree of safety associated with these vehicles. But if you look at what's happening with things like Waymo vehicles, those are the Google cars that you see traveling around North America, they've only logged about 100 million miles so far. And really, you need about three times that amount of travel in, say, a fleet of 100 vehicles without any accidents at all to be confident that these vehicles are entirely safe. And having said that, we've seen some anecdotal cases of accidents involving driverless cars with pedestrians and cyclists where they're not really sort of tuned into the scenarios that those particular traffic situations represent. And that's a bit of a worry for us. So if those vehicles can't really detect the presence of pedestrians and cyclists and other road users satisfactorily, then there may be some safety challenges that we've yet to overcome.
Question is, how might public transport change in the future? I think one of the main things is that we won't necessarily see that kind of very sort of regular timetable that we see now. I think one of the big issues people have in terms of particularly maybe bus use is it never quite goes from your door to where you want to go, and it never quite goes at the time you want to go. So there's something called demand responsive transport, which is becoming, I mean, it kind of does exist in some cities already, and I think it will become much more prevalent. And that's essentially you kind of find out generally where people are wanting to go, and then you kind of manage the transport system around them. So it may be that you have a lot of people going from one housing estate to a particular place of employment. University is a really good example. Lots of people come from, I know where I live, to here. There's no particular bus that gets you door to door, and the idea of demand responsive transport is almost like your personalised bus service that will get you from A to B. And obviously with mobile phones and data and, you know, being able to kind of know, be much more aware of kind of where people are going and at what times, having transport on demand is kind of a much more viable option now.
What will driving tests in the future be like? This is a very good question, simply because I think the whole role of the driver in autonomous vehicles, say in 20 or 30 years, is going to shift dramatically from being somebody who's in control of the car to being maybe a monitor of the technology to make sure that everything is functioning fairly reliably. So there probably won't be a need to do all the sorts of things that we take for granted now, such as understanding clutch control, acceleration, braking, gear change, using of mirrors, because all that will be done for you by the car. So maybe there will be more of a role for having the driving test as being a monitor of the vehicle and a monitor of the technology, understanding the technology's functionality, rather than being somebody who's actually fundamentally being in control of the vehicle. So yes, I think we're going to see pretty big changes in the years ahead.
Could new vehicle technology lead to a reduction in accidents on the road, and if so, how? There's a lot of projects going on at the moment trying to work out the best way that we can use technology to help reduce the number of accidents on the road. As transport safety researchers, this is our ultimate goal, is we want to reduce the number of accidents that we see, and technology does have a strong role to play in that. One of the projects that I'm working on at the moment, we're starting to think about how we can integrate technologies related to monitoring a vehicle. So knowing, for example, what speed the vehicle is going but then integrating that with a different set of technologies which could monitor the driver. So for example, having a technology which can monitor the driver's heart rate will give us an indication of things such as their stress level. But then we also want to know if we can integrate these with other technologies which could monitor the environment. Technologies which would include cameras, like forward-facing cameras that can pick up the proximity to other vehicles. So these are three very different types of technology. And then if we can integrate these signals together into one technology system, which can help inform the driver of any upcoming accident, then the driver will have the opportunity to take action to stop the situation arising before the accident occurs. And then on from that in the future, when we have more control over the vehicle and interacting with the vehicle itself, perhaps the signals or our intervention can bypass the driver altogether, go straight to the vehicle and allow the vehicle to intervene before an accident occurs.
Will we all be driving hydrogen-powered cars one day? So, yes, there's no doubt that future transport has to be low-carbon or carbon-neutral, but there's different options to achieve that. We have electric vehicles and hydrogen fuel cell cars. I don't see they are like competitors. In the future, you will see a mixture of low-carbon vehicles on road. Battery vehicles are more suitable for urban mobility because it has benefits on the techno-economics when we drive in the short range. But hydrogen fuel cell vehicles probably are more suitable for long-distance heavy-duty vehicles, commercial vehicles, etc.
What will autonomous driving's biggest obstacle be before it becomes a common feature? And I think the answer to this has to be reliability, and that's why so many of the manufacturers are doing so much testing in order to ensure the reliability of vehicles. If you look at autonomous vehicles, they can function very, very well currently on motorway situations. So Tesla, for example, already has an auto-drive function where you can just allow the vehicle to perform very limited maneuvers on a motorway. And that makes a lot of sense, really. You've got all of the traffic traveling in a uniform direction. There are no junctions. There are no vulnerable road users. Most of the speeds are fairly homogeneous. So overall, you can really program a car to do autonomous functionality in that situation quite comfortably. What becomes a challenge is when you've got more complex traffic situations, so where you have the inner urban area traffic situations, where you've got potential for traffic conflicts, you've got a large percentage of vulnerable road users using the roads. Those are the situations currently where autonomous vehicles don't deal with very well. And we've already seen anecdotal cases, particularly in the US, where autonomous vehicles and vulnerable road users have come together. And obviously the vulnerable road user is the person who comes off worse. So that's the biggest obstacle, trying to ensure that autonomous vehicles can cope with these very complex traffic situations where there's lots of unpredictability on behalf of the other road users.